Chapter 24. Kalua's reddish sun was cresting the ridgeline, limning the crowns of the tallest trees and warming the air. Leia began to rub her hands together, but stopped when she realized that the chill she felt had nothing to do with the temperature. North of the trail, in an area of trees that were snapped in half, the team had come upon a crashed coral skipper. The craft's translucent, mica-like canopy was cracked, and inside the cavity that served as a cockpit sat the dead pilot. The cognition hood that was the pilot's living interface with the coral skipper was shriveled and stuck to his face like a sheet of flimsoplast. Han was squatting on the craft's blunt nose, poking at a deep red heart-shaped mass studded with pale blue projections that had dropped from the fractured fuselage. "Dovan Basil's dead," he said.
"Same with the rock spitters," Kip replied.
The Jedi Master was circling the craft while Raw and Sasso inspected the cockpit. Paige, Furfur, and Malok were scouting the forest to the north in the direction of Kalula City. The Timbus were grazing contentedly nearby. Han stood up, put the edge of his hand to his brow, and gazed at the splintered trees.
"Came in from that direction."
He pointed to a depression some distance away. "Hit the ground there, plowed its way through those bushes, and came to a stop here." Kip completed his circle of the craft, nodding his head.
"Only question is, what brought it down?"
"Kalula Orbital. What else?" Kip regarded the coral skipper.
"No signs of laser fire from batteries or starfighter cannons."
Han's forehead wrinkled.
"Can't be."
He ducked down to appraise what he could of the underside, then stood up. "Must have caught a bolt straight through the canopy."
"No signs of that either," Sasso said, jumping down to the ground.
Han looked at Kip. "Could have been stunned by an ion cannon." He let his words trail off when he realized the impossibility of it. "No craft comes down the gravity well at terminal velocity and ends up looking like this one." Kip nodded in agreement.
"From the way the trees are sheared off and the depth of the initial impact crater, the skip couldn't have been higher than 300 meters.
"A patrol craft," Sasso said. "That would explain why there's no heat damage." Han turned to the Rodian. "Could one of your people have shot it down? Someone in the Resistance?" Sasso shook his head.
"We don't have the weapons for that."
Raw leapt down from the cockpit.
"So what happened? It suffered heart failure?"
Han made his lips a thin line and shrugged. "Maybe with the Yuuzhan Vong devoting almost everything they have to the Armada, they've exiled their shoddiest biotes and least experienced warriors to worlds like Kalula." He laughed ruefully. "They're in even worse shape than we are."
"No," Kip said. "Only here are they in worse shape."
Leia listened to them trying to convince themselves that there was a reasonable explanation for the crashed craft and the inept warriors they had ambushed. But in fact, lack of genuine explanations had everyone on edge. Worried that the team was under surveillance, no one had slept the previous night. In the morning, they had made a decision to abandon the trail and bushwhack through the thick forest in the hope of avoiding detection. That they hadn't seen any reconnaissance biotes or evidence of foot patrols had only added to the suspicion that they were being led into a trap. Then their purposefully meandering path had brought them to the coral skipper.
"You know what could have happened," Han was saying. "The Yamisk could have steered it wrong."
"I can see that," Sasso said.
"I can even see that a crash like this could take out the pilot and the Dovan Basil."
"But why would the cognition hood die? Do the hoods feed off the basils?" He stared at the coral skipper.
"I spent more time trying to avoid them than study them."
"Our daughter could explain it," Han said. "She's actually piloted a vessel like this."
"Jaina."
A sense of deep concern flooded through Leia, but before she could begin to make sense of it, Han was yelling something at Raw. Leia saw that the Bothan had clambered back to the cockpit and was making sketches of the interior. Something to show the grandchildren, Ross said when Han demanded to know what he was doing. Grandchildren? You'd be lucky to even have kids of your own. Raw closed the sketch pad. If I do, I know I'll have sense enough to keep them out of the war.
Han advanced on the Bothan with menacing familiarity. I'm going to have to teach you the ways of the world before this is over.
Leia could see that Kip was ready to step between them, but the confrontation went no further.
He's Corellian, Kip said quietly to Raw while Han was walking away. They don't make idle threats.
Raw only sniggered. Sasso left to find Malok, Paige, and Furfur. Han, Leia, and Kip were gathering the Timbus when Han said,
You realize we're being reeled in?
Kip nodded.
It's probably been that way from the beginning. But that doesn't mean we still can't pull this mission off. We just have to watch our backs.
Speaking of which, did intelligence run backgrounds on Sasso and Furfur?
You'd have to check with Ra. I do know that both of them joined the Resistance before the Yuuzhan Vong showed up in the Kalula system. Sasso even served on Kalula Orbital for a while.
So at least we're not being sold to the Vong.
As far as I can tell.
Sasso's whistled signal wafted into the clearing, and several moments later he, Paige, the Wren, and Malok stepped from the trees. In her sucker-tipped hands, the Hodin cradled a dozen or so insects, delicately winged and equipped with large bioluminescent eye spots. She set them on the ground, then sat down beside them.
They're dead, she announced in an anguished tone. The entire forest is littered with bodies. In most cases, they died inside their shells. Others appear to have died in flight.
All of them? Leia asked, nonplussed.
Malok shook her head. But the survivors are moving very lethargically.
She gazed at Leia and the others.
Something terrible has happened here.
Han and Kip traded dark glances.
Let's get moving, Paige told everyone.
Several hours of mostly downhill trudging brought Team Malok to a low ridge that overlooked the southern portion of Kalula City and the prominent hive-like Yuuzhan Vong Minchao that harbored the Yanisk.
There are three entrances, Sasso explained from the spot of cover the team found. Two in the front, and one on the east side. All of them are dilating membranes that can be pierced by blaster bolts. Guards are stationed at each, usually three or four at any given time. They stand long shifts, so it would be to our advantage to strike at sundown, just when the afternoon shift is ending. The garrison is made up of about 75 warriors. There's also a commander, his subaltern, at least one priest, and one of those long-tressed technicians.
A shaper, Leia said.
The Rhodian nodded.
As for the Yamisk, I don't know how to kill it, but I'm guessing you have some idea.
Leave that to me, Kip said.
It's important that we take out their Velop communications while we're at it, Paige added. Leia gazed out over the flat rooftops of the simple city. Judging by the position of the sun, the team was in for a long wait. Furfur volunteered to find a place to conceal the Timbus. He rose, but had scarcely moved off when a gurgling exclamation of surprise rang from just inside the tree line. Everyone whirled at once to see the Wren staggering toward them, his belly opened like a ripe fruit. Behind him emerged four relatively short and dark-complected Yuuzhan Vong warriors. Han shot Leia the briefest of astonished looks and drew his blaster. Paige did the same with his rifle, but he hadn't even lifted it to firing position when it was whipped from his grip by one of the longest amphistaffs Leia had seen, and hurled through the air like a twig. Sasso was already charging the enemy wielding the amphistaff, but he didn't get 3 meters when the warrior leapt over him and, on landing, whirled and thrust a kufi deep into the Rhodian's back. Kip and Leia ignited their lightsabers at the same instant. Continuous fire from Han and Ra had driven two of the warriors to the ground, but neither had been hit.
Kip raced for the nearest one, catching the warrior across the chest with a powerful upswing of his blade. The Yuuzhan Vong growled and rolled, but his dark, unarmored flesh showed only a shallow, bloodless furrow. Kip whirled and brought the blade down like an axe. Evading the strike, the warrior rose to one knee and unfurled his amphistaff. The serpent-like creature elongated and wrapped itself around the hilt of the lightsaber. But Kip wasn't about to surrender his weapon. In a virtual tug of war with the creature, he spun and backflipped, but to little effect. At the same time, a second amphistaff lassoed him around the waist and arms and yanked him roughly to the ground. Han put three bolts into the second warrior, driving him two steps backward with each, but without killing him or persuading the amphistaff to loosen its constricting hold on Kip. Han yelled for Raw's help, but in a glance saw that the Bothan was trying desperately to keep the other pair of warriors from grabbing Paige. Without really thinking about it, Leia judged that Han and Kip were in great jeopardy. Holding her blade at her right hip and pointed slightly downward, she moved against the warrior whose amphistaff was flinging Kip from side to side. Han felt rather than saw Leia race past him. "Leia!" he screamed, firing constantly while he rushed to catch up with her. A quartet of bolts holed the warrior Leia had targeted. But at once, the other warrior commanded his amphistaff to withdraw from the pommel of Kip's lightsaber and fly toward Leia. Seeing what was coming, Han dived forward in a frantic attempt to place himself between Leia and the attenuating weapon. Leia watched in horror as the amphistaff struck Han solidly in the neck, and not merely with its rounded head. The jaws of the living weapon gaped, and it sank two long fangs into Han's flesh. Han landed hard on his side, but quickly got to his knees. He managed to squeeze off three more bolts before the blaster slipped from his trembling hand. He slumped backward on his heels in shock, then tipped to one side, his body curling inward, with his shaking hands close to his chest. Kip raced forward, only to be set upon by three of the warriors. Leia's mouth fell open in a silent scream. She dropped the lightsaber and ran to Han. Gazing in horror at the twin punctures in his neck, she viced his spasming right hand between hers. "Han," she cried, "Han!" Malok was suddenly by her side, lifting Han's head from the ground. His face was a bloodless mask of pain and sorrow. "I knew from the start this wasn't my war," he stammered. Twin rivulets of blood coursed from the wounds in his neck. "Han," Leia said, wide-eyed with terror. She looked up at the advancing warriors, two of whom had a tight hold on Kip, almost as if expecting them to come to Han's aid. Instead, one of them dragged her and Malok to their feet. "No, no," Leia said, shaking her head back and forth. Han extended his hand to her, but the warrior kicked it aside. Han's eyes rolled up, his eyelids fluttered, and his body went limp. "No," she screamed, as the warriors were hauling her away. Casualty assessment of the first engagement, Warmaster, Supreme Commander Loirik Khan said, gesturing to a wall niche in the command chamber of Yamka's mount. Nas Choka turned from the observation transparency to study the commotion of blaze bugs. "Acceptable," he pronounced after a moment. "A clever use of machines," Loirik Khan remarked. The Warmaster's finely haired upper lip curled, and he glowered at his supreme commander. "Another act of cowardice. Stop thinking in terms of the weapons our enemy employ, and concentrate on how they fight. Think of the machines as living beings, if it will help you view the matter with more clarity." Loirik Khan bowed his head. "Warmaster." Nas Choka moved to the blaze bug niche that displayed the disposition of the enemy battle groups. "They seek to spare the new capital," Loirik Khan said, "but they cannot save it now." Nas Choka beckoned to one of his subalterns. "Escort Supreme Commander Loirik Khan from the command chamber. If this war could be won by words of confidence, we would have already vanquished them." The Warmaster kept his back turned to Khan while he was being led to the chamber's iris membrane. "The number of ships is significantly lower than calculated," the chief tactician said when the membrane had resealed itself.
Of course, Naschoka said. Trusting to the effectiveness of their deceptions, they decided to keep additional ships in reserve to execute their secondary objectives.
Starfighter wings forming up for strikes, a subaltern reported. Naschoka sniffed.
Like a swarm of insects that can't be outdistanced or repelled. The pests can, however, be eradicated.
He turned to the female stationed at the Villip Choir.
Order Domains Vang and Pekin to spray the contaminated areas. Then command the Yamasks to spruce up our formations with auxiliary coral skippers.
The Warmaster and the Chief Tactician swung to the transparency to see brilliant plumes of plasma discharged omnidirectionally from the core. Dozens of the small fighters disappeared, and as many others were shocked into submission.
Again, Naschoka ordered.
A second torrent of molten death poured from the war vessels, obliterating yet more starfighters.
Now assign Yorick Akaga and Yorick Vec to the rear. Let Matalox serve as our spearhead.
The subaltern snapped his fist to his shoulders in salute.
Warmaster, the Villip Choir tactician interjected judiciously. Communication from Supreme Overlord Shimra.
Naschoka turned to the array and genuflected in front of Shimra's dedicated Villip. Everyone else in the command chamber kneeled, with foreheads pressed to the deck.
It bodes well, Dreadlord, Naschoka began. We will deliver victory to you this day or die in the attempt.
Better for you, Warmaster, that you die delivering victory.
Understood, Lord.
Shimra's Villip spoke again.
You have my blessing, and the blessings of the gods. Yun Yuzhan and Yun Yamka soar at your sides, as your right and left hands.
I sense their presence, great Lord.
Does the enemy cower before us?
For the moment their fleet holds fast.
Then they have mustered the courage to meet us toe to toe. It will be their downfall. You have my full confidence, Warmaster. I leave you to your business.
The dedicated Villip inverted to its original leathery appearance.
Naschoka rose and paced to the transparency to observe the matched fury of coral skippers and starfighters, Yorick Vec and Scimitar bombers.
Sav and Creefay are fighting with their minds, not their bodies, he said to the chief tactician. They are the smaller individual who engages a larger one. Even if he is swift enough to get inside his opponent's defenses, his hands are too small to cause severe damage, and his muscles lack the power to bring his opponent to his knees, so he plans more carefully. Perhaps he goads the bigger warrior to swing first and miss, hoping then to unbalance him with a precisely timed shove or kick to the knee. Or perhaps he brings his equally small friends to stand at his back, and he strikes first, confident that his cohorts will be ready to find openings. He offers them as a distraction, so that when the larger warrior risks a glance to the right, a blow arrives from the left.
Naschoka's expression hardened.
This battle is not the last stand. It has nothing to do with honor or a willingness to meet death. This is a feint. Fortunately, I have my suspicions about where the would-be surprise blow is coming from.
The tactician nodded knowingly. Naschoka turned to the Villip Choir mistress.
Alert domain groups Shenga, Pasar, Eklut, and Tav. On my command, they will separate from the armada and prepare to go to dark space.
She bowed.
To Tungul and Kalula, and from there to Yuzhan Tar.
Naschoka sneered. Play with your Villip's mistress. Leave strategy to those who live to fight. He summoned the chief tactician forward.
Command her, tactician.
To the Perlemian trade route,
the slight Yuzhan Vaughn told the Villip mistress.
And from there, to Khan Trum.
Leia was still in shock when the three surviving warriors led her, Kip, Paige, Raw, and Malok into the Yamask installation. Sasso and Furfur had been left to die in the forest. Han they dragged behind by his wrists like a slaughtered animal. He was alive but unconscious, or comatose, from the venom delivered by the warrior's amphistaff. Even in her dread, however, Leia was not too oblivious to notice that only one weary guard was posted at the Minshal's eastern dilating membrane, and that the membrane itself looked thin and weak, and oozed a viscous liquid. The guard struggled to rise as the trio of warriors approached. Barely strong enough to cross his arms in salute, he said something to them in a feeble voice.
"He's telling them that the commander is waiting," Page translated quietly.
One of the warriors stumbled a bit as they crossed the threshold into the gloomy interior of the Minshal. Oddly, he was the only one of the three who hadn't been wounded during the brief action. Kip noticed the stumble as well.
"Something's not right."
He received a hard jab in the ribs for speaking. Inside, the smell of rot was overpowering. Pools of sallow liquid had collected on the spongy floor, and the bioluminescent wall lichen was rashed with black spots. Thousands of dying arachnid-like insects, similar to the ones Leia had seen in the living cofferdam, crawled about in seeming confusion. Dead flit gnats littered the ground. A female shaper was borne into the antechamber on a litter, carried by two more of the squat, dark-complected warriors. Her skin was as pale green as Leia's falsely colored face, and the many-fingered hand that had been grafted to her wrist hung limply at her side. The warriors shoved Leia and the others forward and rolled Han onto his back nearby. Leia's heart leapt when she saw him stir. The shaper was addressing the warriors from atop her litter.
"She's congratulating them on capturing us," Milok whispered to everyone. "She says we will contribute greatly to the sacrifice."
The shaper called two of the troops forward and spent a long moment looking them over, inspecting their faces, limbs, and torsos. One of the warriors indicated a tumor-like growth on his neck and dropped to one knee at the foot of the litter in what appeared to be humiliation.
"What's going on?"
Kip asked Milok. She listened for a moment.
"The warrior thinks he has become a shamed one, because his body is rejecting some sort of enhancement he received."
Milok listened for a moment more, then added,
"The shaper's telling him that he is not shamed, that the growth of the tumor has nothing to do with the gods and everything to do with this world. Everything to do with Kalula."
"Kalula?" Page repeated in bafflement. The warrior looked relieved. Rising, he drew his kufi and turned toward Leia, only to be restrained by the shaper's touch.
"He wants to kill us," Milok explained.
"I got that much," Kip said.
"She's reassuring them that we will die before sunset."
"That's relief," Ross said. "For a minute I thought they were going to let us go." Kip glanced at the Bothan.
"Get out all your jokes while there's still time."
The shaper was speaking again. Leia recognized the word Yuuzhan'tar. Milok translated.
"She's ordering the special warriors, the slayers, she calls them, to return her to Coruscant immediately. She says it's imperative that she apprise her master of what has happened here to render everyone ill. She is promising the slayers that the commander is going to see to us personally."
"Yun Harla succors me in my time of need," a male voice said in Basic. The accent was familiar to Leia and clearly to Page, who craned his neck to see who had spoken. A tall, rail-thin Yuuzhan Vong elite entered the antechamber, his scarified arms draped in support around the shoulders of two large but plainly enervated warriors.
"Welcome, Jedi, Hodin, and Bothan. And to you, Captain Page. Did I not promise that I would see you on a funeral pyre?"
Leia suddenly recalled where she had seen him before, aboard the Yuuzhan Vong convoy vessel. It was Commander Malik Carr.